Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
At about noon on August 10th, 1991, hotel staff at the Sheraton Hotel in Martinsburg, West Virginia, discovered American freelance journalist Danny Castellaro naked in the bathtub of room 517. His wrists had been slashed deeply. There were three or four wounds on his right wrist and seven or eight on his left. Blood was splattered on the bathroom wall and floor. The scene was so gruesome that one of the housekeepers fainted when she saw it. The death was ruled a suicide. But details began to emerge that may have signaled foul play. Danny was about to break a story about an international conspiracy he called the Octopus. This week, join the theorists as they try to untangle the many arms of Danny Castellaro and the Octopus Conspiracy.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 259. The Octopussy Murders.
There you go.
The Danny Castellaro and the Octopus Syndicate. I don't know what we're going to call it.
Castellaro.
Danny Castellaro.
And the Tentacle Murders.
That's good. I don't know. Anyways, I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
And I'm surprised we're not redoing that.
What do you mean? You don't like the Octopussy?
I would have been. You just had to pick one and go for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like to pick a couple, right? It gets those hashtags flowing.
Danny Castellaro and the Octopussy. Yeah.
Octopussy Murders.
And the Octopus Party.
Listen, I've been telling everybody for a long fucking time now. Octopuses are dangerous.
Yeah, and this is
it's been uncovered.
This is a cautionary tale. That's what it is.
Absolutely.
You don't want to uncover too much about the octopi.
You look too far into the tentacles.
Yeah.
Perhaps you slit your wrist in a bit.
You're gonna drown.
Yeah, in your own blood. this is, of course, Murder Month. It's probably going to be like murder 3 weeks, I think. Probably one more murder case. We'll see. Maybe it might only be murder.
Maybe you guys will have mustaches for that one.
Mine's filling in.
I haven't shaved it in yet. I'm too thick. We've already gone over this. I'm too thick
fucking
now.
Fucking embrace it. You're not, buddy, listen, I hate to break to you. You're not fucking hiding anything.
Yes, I am.
All right? No, you think you're sitting on a throne of lies?
Ain't fooling nobody.
Your throne of lies is not fooling anybody. You've been hilarious lately. You're fat.
I will tell you this. Okay?
Brain's back.
You think this isn't hiding anything? And then if I shaved, you'd be like, ugh. Yeah.
All right, come on. I mean, there's maybe what, three chins?
No, it's just one big chin, ear to ear. Just... It's all one.
It's like one of those frogs.
Yeah.
It's bulged.
It's
out.
Like that. Remember from fucking what was like the guy, the Naboo, the like main one.
The Gungan
Naboo,
the Gungan King,
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what it kind of
shake
looks like.
It.
Yeah, I got a little loose like lower half of my skin too. So it gives.
Okay, we'll keep the beard. Just keep the beard.
Someone clip that and then slow that down.
But you know what I'll do maybe for next week is I'll trim the beard, keep the mustache nice and thick. I'll do that much at least. So
I can do that.
I'll trim the eyebrows. No eyebrows. Full beard. We'll see. Well,
give you a year and that'll be the look anyways.
yeah. They're They're falling out real quick.
You should have shaved those. Yeah, just shave those off. Get rid of the eyebrows.
I'm going to have to. I think when the time comes for me, it's just, I'll just pick them. I want to hang on to the little tufts.
And then get really mad at people when they say, when they mention it.
the upper half of your face.
Honestly, just got, I'm like, not even comfortable slapped. Having this conversation.
Upper half of your fucking head is just dissolving.
Oh, fuck.
What's happened?
it's just disintegrating.
Yeah, it's like Thanos snap, buddy.
Gone. Oh, yeah, dude, it's whatever. Like I said, that's why you got to go to patreon.com and help us get, at least, you know, we can only afford some like dollar store wigs right now. We're not even in the realm of like high quality toupees yet, but we want the.
But you could get your eyebrows tattooed on.
Oh, you dude, get your hair tattooed.
Yeah, so
on.
No, the hair tattooed's not a good look. Chicks do their eyebrows all the time. Doesn't look bad. It just thickens them up. Tattooed head. Sure, if you've done it, it's not.
Could you imagine
hair,
like next
hair is 3D. Hair is 3D.
You know what? Okay, you know what procedure that I might have to get because my mom had to get it, so it's genetic. That saggy eyebrow, like this part right here.
Oh, the droopies.
Because eventually mine are just going to be hanging like this.
Well, again, just winning the genetic lotto.
Yeah, me? Dude, it was like, yeah, buddy. I didn't even have a nice window. I'm no better. I didn't even have a nice
window.
I'm
fucking 5'7" 3/4.
Could you imagine if like next case file I came in with just a couple caterpillars tattooed on? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I'd love that.
I want to see Eugene Levy's.
Yeah, I would fucking love
like
that.
Like big old thick ones.
Yeah. Hey, Zell, if we ever did some sort of bet, would you ever dye your eyebrow, like just for men, your eyebrows dark?
Just for men, eyebrows?
Yeah, just the eyebrows, nothing else.
They would look so thick.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, on the stream, you can't see it because it's blonde, but this is full. That goes right across.
It's just one brow. Just
one brow.
Yeah.
Just a little less blonde on the outside. I mean, it'd have to be a serious bet. Like, there'd have to be some major repercussions for everyone.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know.
I'm out. I'm out.
Andrew said bleach his eyebrows.
Hollywood Hulk Hogan his eyebrows. Oh, yeah. The frosted tips.
Let me tell you something, brother.
That's good. Anyways.
So we'll discuss some more eyebrow treatments in after hours.
Yeah, We'll figure it out. Anyways, tonight's case file is absolutely mind-boggling. Truly,
another
is.
Old murder mystery.
I will say this: my eyebrows raised so high while reading about this topic. I had a hairline again, like ton of this.
Yeah, it's
like for real.
It's you know, one of our requirements is that if we're doing some sort of murder, it has to have some sort of kind of spooky alien conspiracy.
It needs tentacles.
It's got to have tentacles, at least.
It needs tentacles.
Well, otherwise Dan wouldn't even come on, right?
Right, Dan? Dan? All right. Yeah, there you go.
Thanks,
yeah.
Dan.
Thanks for the approval. This is just that, and this is in the conspiracy realm, just kind of similar where last week was Big Pharma. This is big octopus, man. Big octopus.
Yeah, big
government. You know, potentially silencing investigative journalists. Where do we start with this one?
Investigatory.
Well, this one, we're going to take it back to August 10th, 1991, when housekeeping staff at a Sheraton hotel in Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Mama.
Take
me home, but not the bathtub.
My cut wrists. They discovered American freelance journalist Danny Casolaro. He was naked in a bathtub of the room 517. His wrists had been deeply slashed. 3 or 4 wounds on his right wrist and another 7 or 8 on his left. Blood, obviously, from a wound like that, splattered around the bathroom wall and floor. And was so gruesome, the story goes, that the housekeeping staff actually fainted upon.
Yeah. Dios mío.
I mean.
Okay.
What?
Jesus.
What?
Oh, nothing.
Okay, well, we just keep going.
What's the matter with
that? No.
Housekeeping? No?
No.
That's over the line? Okay.
That's
can't
fine.
Be, housekeeping. Can't be a multi-language person.
Yeah,
I was killing you.
Sure.
Wow, Andrew.
Hey.
This is,
don't you put that back on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't you put that evil on me, bud. That's all
Fat
you
brain can wear say whatever he wants.
Yeah, okay.
I guess.
No repercussions.
You remember Gary from the bus?
Back in the day? Don't tempt me. I'll start dropping M words. This case file, no problem.
When the paramedics arrived, they found an empty Milwaukee beer can, two white plastic trash bags, a single-edged razor blade, a half-empty wine bottle. And other than that, it was pretty much a regular old hotel room. Pretty clean and tidy. Nothing too out of the ordinary.
Apparently, it was like meticulously clean.
Almost too clean?
Like he hadn't even really fucking stayed in it yet, or it had just recently been cleaned.
The sheets were still tucked ever so tight that you can't get them out.
Little chocolate on the pillow, you know, a little chocolate on the
little
pillow.
Little indoor or something.
Not a ton of jizz stains.
Yeah.
Not visible at least.
Oh, yeah, none to the naked eye.
Yeah.
So fucking.
Hotels
are so nasty. Like, oh, dude, the worst part is like, you know, a week later, someone's in this room like, it smells a little weird in here.
It smells weird.
Why are my bed sheets crunchy? Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Man, this bathtub's got a tinge to it.
Next time you enter a hotel room, just sit there, sit on the bed and look around and think of everything that could have happened in that room.
I'll tell you, you've never been to a hotel room where any hotel room you've ever been in your entire life has either everything that you're looking at in that room has been jizzed on or someone's died. Those are two.
100%.
Certainties.
Puked on, shit on, jizzed on.
Yeah, anywhere you look in that hotel room, filthy.
You think absolutely the curtains filthy. Are safe? Think again.
Think again.
Curtains are the one thing they don't clean, actually.
Yeah.
They never clean.
And that's why this episode is brought to you by Airbnb.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think hotel room's bad. How about someone's house?
Yeah.
So it's a very clean and orderly hotel room. But there was a legal pad and pen on the desk. It seemed to be a single page removed and a message written on it. To those who I love the most, please forgive me for the worst possible thing I could have done. Most of all, I'm sorry to my son. I know deep down inside that God will let me in. So it's
case closed.
Suicide note.
Suicide.
Case closed.
Cut and dry suicide, boom. Right?
Got a half bottle of wine. You got a suicide note. Guy cuts his wrists in the bathtub.
Got an old Millie, right?
Right?
You got to be pretty depressed to be drinking old Milwaukee.
I drink old Milwaukee all day.
Ooh, that makes sense, though. That lines up.
I have to. It's the cheapest beer I can get. I drink one of these from Phillips. It's like almost expensive as a bottle of wine.
Yeah, it's a strong, though, too.
No, that one's only a 5%.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, after the police showed up and noted there was an absence of a struggle, right? So we just said that meticulous route.
Oh, yeah. I could argue that there was
job, cops.
Absence of any kind of detective work because they just walked in. They went, oh, easy Sunday at the office, boys. Your classic hotel suicide.
Walked in.
Third this week.
No sign of struggle, no sign of forced entry. There was presence of alcohol. They seen the bottle of wine, the old Milwaukee can, and they said, well, goddamn, that's a straightforward suicide. Yeah. No big deal. The police went and interviewed other members or other people that were staying in the hotel at the time and revealed that no one had really seen or heard anything suspicious. They contacted authorities in Fairfax, Virginia, who said they would notify Castellero's family. So he dies. They come, ruled a suicide. Seems like
I'm surprised this is even a case file. It sounded pretty straightforward to me, right?
Yeah. So later on that Saturday, Castellero's body was then transferred to the funeral home, where it was embalmed without an autopsy or his family's consent.
What? It also, which is extremely interesting about this, that is actually illegal in the state of Virginia.
I imagine it's illegal in most places to just take a body without consent from the family and just start working on it.
Embalm and remove all the organs and drain the blood. And
it's kind of one of those things where I guess it would kind of fall under like, you know, whatever the last wishes of the person was. Like if he wanted to be open casket or if you wanted to be cremated, right? It's like you were like taking someone's basically last choice away.
Okay, open a casket, but definitely not burying him in a short sleeve.
Yeah, long sleeves. Dios mio. Look at that one.
Well, it's weird that they did it without the family's consent, because they obviously told the family right away that they found their family member deceased at that time.
They would call them right away.
Absolutely. Right?
Notify next of kin. It was standard procedure, which they did 48 hours after the body had already been embalmed.
And like, let's just be clear. Like, I kind of thought was like, well, maybe they had a hard time identifying him. They didn't. They had his wallet.
No, his wallet was in the hotel
room. His ID. They knew who it was for whatever reason. They're like, this one just slipped through the cracks. Like, hey, did you call the family? I was like, I thought you were calling the family, chief. Like,
whoops. Johnson, you call the family? Yeah. I didn't call the family. You call the family?
I will say, as someone who's made that phone call, not something you want to do.
I 100%. It's hard. I've never had to make it. I would imagine it's a very difficult thing to do. But it's your job.
It has to be done. But
yeah. I just give it to
you. You can't duck it.
Just quick.
Hello, Miss Casalero. Your husband is dead. Goodbye. Bye.
Yeah.
Hang the phone up.
On the bright side, the hotel room was extremely clean.
Unfortunately, he was drinking Old Milwaukee and a bottle of wine. But
bye. Yeah. He's just getting graphic detail.
Right?
Jeez. So Dan, calm down. We're not going to get into graphic detail. All right, let's calm down.
It's fine.
It's all good.
Yes, we are. We are.
So 2 days after he was found dead and embalmed, they notify his brother. First, his brother, Tony, he's like, no one told me that my brother was dead.
He was like, his account is like at the hospital. He like gets a call. He's like, from his mom. His mom's like, hey. He's like, what's going on? He's like, Tony's dead. He's like, what? When? What happened? She's like, he died 2 days ago. He's like, wait, what? This is unbelievable. They like just called me. And he's blown away. Like, he's at work. And he's a doctor. Dr. Tony.
Yeah. So his brother's a doctor and so is his father.
Oh, do you know he was the black sheep, eh?
It's a family pedigree here. And he's out here chasing stories.
Oh, he's an investigatory journalist.
He's like
also moonlighted as a treasure hunter. I don't know if you guys saw that.
what treasure was he hunting?
He literally quit college to go search for fucking buried treasure in like South America.
That's pretty badass, though.
Yeah, I would say
he lived
too.
A way more fun life.
Yeah,
way more.
Like, yeah, wow,
you know, like his dad, like at Christmas and stuff. He goes Saturday. So he's like, Danny or Daniel, how's your stories? As your stories you write. He's like, Dad, I'm a journalist. I write papers. And he's like, oh yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Going good? Good? Those paying the bills? You can always get your PhD.
You can always go back, even if you're 40. No big deal. His brother Tony learns about his death and how he like commit his deemed suicide by cut his wrists. And his brother was not convinced that his brother would have done that. He says, didn't really have a history of depression as far as they knew. So he demanded an autopsy as he should.
Well, he had good reason to, though. Like with the last conversation he had with his brother, that right there would be like, no, listen, this is something's happening.
Well, from that last conversation that we're going to touch on, he knew his brother, and his brother was one thing, super fucking squeamish with like needles and blood. So the second they're like, he slashed his wrist, he's like, my brother wouldn't have done that. He couldn't have. He's so terrified of the sight of blood and like needles. I just cannot fathom that he would do this to himself.
He's pretty much saying if he killed himself, he thinks if his brother did kill himself, he's like, he would have done it a different way in his mind. Like, there's no way he's going to cut himself that gruesomely.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know what? Not to say that we don't know the mindset. The mind goes to a lot of dark places when somebody's contemplating suicide. Sure. Right? So we don't know what kind of mind frame he was in, but the fact that before he left, he spoke with his brother and he had told his brother that that he had frequent harassing phone calls late at night, that some of them were threatening his life, and that if something were to happen to him while he was in Martinsburg, it would not be an accident.
What?
Right? Okay, so not even mentioning the fact this guy's fucking terrified at the sight of blood. super squeamish. Both his parent, his dad and his brother are doctors. They've said, like, we've tried to run to, you know, we've tried to do blood work. We've tried to have him in, refuses to get needles, forgets to get blood work done. Guy, like, wants to faint at the sight of blood, right? And he's also getting these threatening phone calls and being like, hey, listen,
I might die.
If something happens to me, it's like intentional. This is not an accident.
So,
and that's not where the fucking weirdness stops, boys. We're just getting fucking stared at.
No, I mean, because we've presented this as a, it's a seems like a regular case at face value without knowing any of the details. Guy's in a hotel room, cuts his wrists or whatever. But no, it gets crazier. So at the funeral.
This is my favorite part, by the way. This is my favorite part. And just so you know, if either of you two die before me, this will be happening at your funeral. Just so you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I will hire people.
Just to fuck with the family.
And then I will start the room. I'll be like, who is that?
Right? So at his funeral, friends and family, acquaintances, out of nowhere, a highly decorated military officer, like in full... in full, like,
pulls up in a
dress uniform
in a black sedan
and everything.
In a black sedan, pulls up first.
I thought it was a limousine, is what I read.
I heard a stretch black sedan. There was a couple different, but
yeah, town and country, or like a stretch, or like a luxury ride.
Boys, it was fucking classy.
Yeah, classy ride. He shows up. He's got the full garb on. He's got the medals. He looks the part, and no one. None of the family knew who he was.
No, he's got a bodyguard with him too.
Yeah, he showed up just near the end of the service, kind of like seemed to stand there for a bit, and then they left. And everyone's like, who the fuck was that guy?
Well, before he left, though, as the casket was getting lowered into the ground, he walked up to the casket and placed a medal on the casket and left.
Because that's... Isn't in the military, isn't that, don't they like hammer something into the casket if you're a military service member? Like if you die in...
I think that and law enforcement.
Law enforcement. So that's what it kind of seems like he's doing something to commemorate his service or something.
Which is bizarre though, because the family, everybody says like there's no, Danny was not involved in the military whatsoever. Yeah. He never had any... served. There's no duty, nothing.
Well, and also he, like the military guy was tailed by like, you know, this very official looking guy wearing like, you know, an executive line. Like if you don't know what that is, that's a beltless trench coat with his aviators, right? Like just looking very government official, just kind of like tailing this guy.
What do you think he had under that fucking general, trench coat, right? Place? It's packing heat.
He must have bought that from Jack Klompas, 100%.
Had to. He fucking...
He got that shipped up from Del Boca Vista, without a doubt.
Yep. No moths.
So after the funeral, his brother gets his wish and they redo an autopsy, even though they say, well, it's going to be a problem because everything's been removed and it's going to be a little more difficult.
Yeah, like he's already been embalmed. What do you want? Like you want a sample of his fucking the embalming fluid? Like what the fuck?
They're like, hey, we don't usually do this for you know, people who committed suicide. Like this is a suicide, you know, right? Yeah, like suicide. Weird. You don't want to do this. It's suicide. Yeah. It costs a lot of money.
What the fuck you waste my time? Yeah. He's embalmed. What do you want from me, huh? But so before we get into that, like so I have some details on the autopsy. Before we get into that, I want to bring up too. So we've had the fact that he told his brother, hey, if anything happens to me, you know, it's deliberate. Somebody's had an attempt on my life. We've got him stating that he's had these threatening phone calls. Well, his housekeeper also corroborates the threatening phone calls. Okay. He's been getting them for a couple months leading up to him leaving to Martinsburg. The day he leaves at 9 a.m., the housekeeper answers the phone. And on the other end, he's got a guy, which I'm just going to guess the voice since we're doing racial stereotypes here. I will cut his body and feed him to the fish. Huh?
Whoa.
That sounds super. I'm not a Arab.
It's true.
But, right? So on the other line, he tells him, he's like, I'll cut his body.
It's not even an accent, Andrew. Andrew's actual accent is Canadian.
This is an accent.
The Canadian version is his accent.
Yeah.
It's all a ploy.
All right. So he has somebody, she answers, somebody says, I will cut his body and feed him to the sharks. And then less than an hour after that, She picks up the phone again and somebody just says, drop dead.
Yeah.
Okay. The third phone call comes
in. You don't know me, but I know you and I know where you live.
From Rusty Shackelford.
That not necessarily happened, but the third time she answered the phone, there was just music playing with heavy breathing. And then there was a fourth and fifth call that were just dead.
This is all in the same night, or this is over multiple nights?
This is the same day that he left for Martinsburg.
Fuck. Dude, how crazy were landlines? You know what I mean? Like, people could look up your number and then just torment you. Like, how many times have you guys been tormented ever? Never. That's never happened to me.
I get so many fucking tormenting fucking sales calls every day. It's insane.
Boys, listen though, if I'm getting somebody telling me they're going to cut me and feed me the fish, and then I'm just getting like, okay, you know what? I'll deal with that one. I've heard worse over the phone, but they're breathing.
That would really unnerve me.
That's way where it's time to move. Yeah. It's time to move. Change your fucking phone. Time to move.
Because it's like, it's such a weird time, the 90s, because like you could just go to a phone book and if you knew someone's last name, you knew their address and their telephone number. At any point, you'd just be like, yeah, this is where they live and this is how I can call and breathe into the phone. Like, what a time to be a stalker.
You could have paid for a private number.
Right? What a time. No one, what a time to be a stalker.
Listen, boys. Hey, listen. Fuck, star 69.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, but what if you star 67 before you call?
Before they star 69.
Yeah.
You remember when those motherfuckers used to three-way call
you? Oh, yeah.
I used to get set up all the time. You'd be talking to a girl on the phone and then be like, oh, well, she's on the other line. You're like, oh, motherfucker.
That never happened.
Anyways.
I never had any girls talking to me.
Anyways. So we got the housekeeper that's corroborating these phone calls. We've already talked about the fact that the family's like, listen, Danny, super squeamish, faints in sight of blood, didn't even let us do blood work on him, wanted nothing to do with it. There's no way that he slashed his wrists. Okay. We had a girlfriend that lived with him for 7 years. Said, Danny is basically Tobias Funke. He's a never nude. There's no way he would kill himself and be caught fucking nude.
You know, I was kind of thinking that too, because I was like, you know what? If I was going to do the deed, I'm probably not getting naked.
No. Listen, okay, listen. As a guy who's, I'm not a big fan of baths, all right? Never been a big fan of baths. There's one major reason why, I'm not a fan of baths. Okay, all right?
Explain this to me.
You're sitting in that bath and your shame just floats at the top of the water and stares you in the fucking eyes.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
all right?
True.
That's not how you want to go, boys. That, okay? Right? It's just floating there.
You can't even add bubbles. Dude, it's worse. There's nothing worse than like the illusion of bubbles so you can't see any other part of your body other than the little piece of calamari floating.
Oh, no. Right there, this is no way this is a suicide.
Absolutely no not. Chance. Absolutely it's, not, man.
Yeah,
what if you're hung, though? What if you're hung, then you don't care? Give a shit. You got like a fucking anaconda
swimming
around the
only way that's an accidental autoerotic asphyxiation. That's the only way. That's...
Yeah, that's true.
I just don't like...
Listen, if you're hung, let's be honest. If you're hung, you're not killing yourself either. So, it is what it is.
Life's no fun. Way.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. All your problems are solved.
Maybe that was the final straw. And you're just like, you know what?
We've already cast a little bit of like reasons why we're starting to doubt the fact that this is a suicide. All right, now let's get into the fucking autopsy that his family had to fucking demand. Okay, his family had to demand, and the fact that he was already embalmed, huge obstacle, right?
Poses a problem.
Well, because they embalmed, like the fact that he's embalmed basically wrecks, like there's no blood left and it wrecks the fucking tissues. But
what do they put? Do they put like formaldehyde in your body or how do they?
Oh, all that shit.
They like just stuff you full of preservatives, right?
Yeah, it's fucking great. The pickle you have. Okay. Luckily, prior to the embalming, there was a blood sample taken from his heart. They took urine sample from him and they also got a sample from the vitreous fluid, which if you know the vitreous fluid, the gel-like fluid around your eye.
Oh, okay.
So they had three samples going.
So they did a couple scoops. They weren't completely clueless. They did a little bit.
Still grossly negligent, but at least they got a few samples. And the autopsy showed that he had a blood alcohol level of 0.04.
So one old Milwaukee.
Okay. One old Millie, like nothing, yeah. like below the legal limit here, let's be honest, yeah. right? But it gets interesting because he had trace amounts of Vicodin and an antidepressant in his system. Danny had a current prescription for Vicodin from an oral surgery that he had a few years ago, but no record of an antidepressant. Zero. He had no prescriptions, no diagnosis of depression, anything like that, okay? And it gets a little bit weirder because there was no fucking bottle found on scene. There was no prescription bottle, nothing, zero trace of where this antidepressant came from. And then
was there a bottle autopsy of the also one?
Of the Vicodin,
there
yes.
Vicodin. There was a Vicodin bottle.
Yeah.
But trace amount. Vicodin. So how fast does Vicodin, or how long does it stay in your system?
Here's the problem. This is just a small sample of blood from the heart. So it had to be what, like, it would be minimal to, compared to what was actually in his system if they actually got a proper blood sample
right,
from
right,
it.
Right, right,
right. Right? Additionally, he had a bruise on his arm and a bruise on his head, which was never accounted for, right? The police stated that there was no signs of any struggle. And he additionally was missing the tips off of three of his fingers, fingernails.
We're talking like the nails so, broken off at the top.
Broken mm-hmm. off of his finger, which sounds awfully like a fucking struggle.
Well, and one of the things I read is that is indicted, like that is, lots of times they see that as a defensive wound. Like you're fighting someone or clawing Absolutely. At someone and that'll happen. Zell, actually, before the show, if you want to share it again, you made a kind of an interesting point.
Yeah, the claw.
Oh. You remember? Yeah, it's
kind of a defensive claw. That wasn't a good point, too. That wasn't the point I was going to. Can you do the reenactment again, too?
Me?
Yeah,
it was you.
No.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
But so
nobody's going to be able to do anything. This is a strong arm.
We were talking about just before the case file of, okay, well, why only three? Like if you were to grab someone and like really try and like pull your way or grab the carpet or grab the counter to try and like pull yourself away and you broke those tips off, why just three? Why not four? Like why? Or like, but he had his, what, one side had severed tendons. The cuts were so deep that actually, so, and even if the tendons weren't severed, having that deep of like just deep cuts on your wrist, I think would affect just nerves and just the way you would use your hands in general.
Listen, not even, let's not even talk about nerves. Let's just talk about fucking pain.
Excruciating pain.
Okay, there's no Vicodin on the, enough Vicodin on the planet that would leave you conscious to be able to literally slash your arm. Like, here's the thing, right? So as somebody who's been to exact situations as this, I've never seen, like, we're not going to show it. If you're curious and you want to look it up, go for it because the pictures are unfortunately available. They're horrifying. This man massacred his arms from his wrist to his elbow.
It's quite okay? unbelievable when you see it.
And like, I've done, I can't even count how many of these that I've been to. I've never, ever seen lacerations this deep and this hard in a suicide. The only time I've ever seen anything close to this is when somebody's literally high on PCP or meth and like mutilating themselves. This, like he massacred his arms. And you're going to tell me that he went and did three slices on one side and still had the strength to do eight on the
and
other?
He used like a razor blade, like one of those little inch and a half blades.
Which
right?
would be so hard
to grab that.
Oh, so yeah, hard to keep a grip.
It's not like he had like a
not
large,
to mention he's wet. He's in the bathtub.
Yeah, it's not like he had like a
there's blood everywhere.
He didn't do it with a razor sharp knife where you could like use leverage to do it. Would have had to do it with force. Like
he would have had an angle. Yeah, he would have had a really.
So this man who's squeamish with blood, massacres each of his arms in a pool of water, which then would turn the water into blood, which he's terrified of. And that's the way he chooses to die.
And then what, and to get back to my point of he loses three fingertips. If there was a struggle, because it does say he has a bruise on his arm and his head. So either someone grabbed him and threw him down or whatever. If he was fighting back and he had his wrist cuts and in the last ditch effort to protect himself, maybe his tendons are cut. So maybe he's not reaching with like a strength, like a strong fist or strong grasp. Maybe only has
to, he wouldn't.
It just seems
the pain would be unimaginable.
And see, the other thing that popped into my head too is that Zell, what you said is like, say you kind of mentioned earlier that like if it was a defensive wound, you know, clawed someone, maybe someone cut those tips off, right? And then I was thinking, because I was like, well, why would they only cut if he scratched and they were worried about DNA, trace DNA under the fingernails, which I, to be honest, I'm not well versed if they were testing for that at this point in time in the 90s, if that was a thing. But if they were...
Oh, this is 1990. Absolutely.
Okay, so then maybe yeah. Like, I'm just saying hypothetically, this is where my mind's going. Maybe someone there started to cut those nails and someone went, what the fuck are you doing? Stop. Like, don't cut any more nails. It's going to be too obvious. Just leave it. Right? We can scrape underneath them or something, yeah. Right? Like, it's...
Why are you giving this guy a fucking manicure? Let's go.
But the reason why I think about that, like that, that aspect of like maybe someone making that kind of slip up, trying to clean things up, we'll kind of touch on in a little bit with some other things that may be out of place in the room.
So maybe his fingertips were removed is what you're saying.
Maybe part of DNA. Yeah.
Yeah.
So despite the second autopsy and all the abnormalities that have come forth, they still go with the initial diagnosis of suicide. Right? They say that he died between 7 and 8 a.m. on August the 10th. So about 5 to 6 hours before he was found. One super interesting thing, though, that they did find out during that autopsy is it was also concluded that Danny was in the early stages of MS.
Really?
Yeah.
Which MS one's
is like
which,
a neurological
yeah,
disease,
which one's
right?
That one again?
Multiple sclerosis.
Is that where you get the curve back?
That's scoliosis.
That's scoliosis.
Sorry. Close.
So MS is a disease. It's like a...
It's a problem with, like, your immune system basically turns on itself. Like your immune system starts attacking healthy functioning organs.
Oh, okay.
It's a disabling disease of the brain and spinal cord, multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, you get like brain lesions and it's
not
awful.
It's people survive it often, but it's a... can be a very debilitating disease.
Another really weird thing, a little bit off topic, is the fact like Canada's MS rates are fucking higher.
Yeah, isn't that a weird stat? That is a weird stat.
Yeah.
Do we drink more aspartame drinks than anyone else?
Hey, listen, I Huberman Lab, listen to it. It's great. They basically, him, two scientists, him and Andrew Huberman and Lane Norton basically disprove the fact that artificial sweeteners really have any negative effects.
Good. No one really knows why.
I crush Coke Zero like none other.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that aspartame studies was only done in mice.
Yeah, but fucking
I'm
mice sure.
Don't listen. I don't want to talk about
why. Well, I'm curious of why Canada would have a higher rate than America, who has an even worse diet than us.
Yeah.
And if it's some type of autoimmune disease, I would imagine some type of diet or something in our food, maybe?
It's probably the cold.
Just arch.
Oh, so I was wrong. It doesn't attack your organs. It attacks the protective sheath, your myelin, that covers the nerve fibers and causes communication problems between your brain and the rest of your body.
Ooh.
My bad. ENP was a long time ago.
It's okay. We'll forgive you.
I guess so, more of so patho, had, but still.
So our boy had early signs of MS.
Yeah,
and I bet. So we've this had is just hypothetical, but I'm imagining that we have the ability to treat. I don't know if it's I don't think it's curable.
We have it's not. We have the way of like delaying onset of symptoms.
Our treatability of it is probably better now than it was then.
It is, but probably not by much. It's still relatively like it's not. But here's the okay. So if we want to get into that, I was going to get into this a little bit later. But you're going to go ahead and tell me that if this guy, like, we're talking early signs of MS, yeah,
like he didn't know.
So
did he know?
I'm assuming he did know. His dad and his fucking brother are doctors. Do you think if he had any noticeable symptoms,
yeah, he would have told them.
His brother and his dad would know.
And
they would have been like, "Hey, man, this is not normal."
If he knew, why wouldn't he tell them? You know, he would have had access to, like, probably. Within a phone call, some of the best help in the world.
So now that we have this second autopsy, they're still ruling it a suicide.
They have no other evidence to overturn their initial.
So you're right, Zell. They don't have any other evidence, but let's go through a little bit of controversy surrounding the fucking initial investigation. Because first of all, they didn't seal off the room as a crime scene.
Ever.
At all?
Ever. Not once.
Okay.
So absolutely
none of the bathwater.
They never once. They pulled out the tape and he goes, "This is a brand new roll. I can't find the end." And they went, "Ah, forget about it."
Hey, listen. Budget cuts. Keep the tape. Okay. None of the bathwater was saved as evidence.
They didn't strain the bathwater.
They didn't strain it. Now listen, could you imagine how much money you could have got out of that on social media? Dead guy bathwater? Yeah. That shit would have been flying off the fucking shelves.
The reason you strain the bathwater, for those don't know, in these kind of incidences, is because the water is obviously filled with blood. You can't see. So you strain it so that you make sure nothing, no evidence goes down the drain. So if there's anything else there,
solid, yeah.
You know, it's big. It's actually pretty commonplace, that practice.
Absolutely. That's and pretty it was then, it's pretty normal practice.
And they just didn't do it.
Then,
so they just pulled the plug in the bathtub and drained the water.
They did find a second fingerprint underneath an ashtray in the room. And then the kicker of all kickers, because I know Braden's champing at the bit to touch on this, is the fact that within a day or two after the scene, I'm pretty sure it was the Sunday, they called a professional cleaning crew.
The next day.
So a Sunday. So on a Sunday, working on God's day, they called a professional cleaning room to come clean this room.
In fairness to the hotel, they probably had a reservation for Sunday night, right? Like business don't sleep, right?
Well, no, absolutely.
It's a business. They got to load the rooms up.
It's not the first person. I guarantee you he's not the first guy to die in their hotel.
No. Well, and the cops probably told him like, oh, this is an open shut case. Go for it. Like clean it up.
Absolutely. This falls on the police, not on the hotel. So let's talk about the professional cleaning company called Les Scrubs.
Les Scrubs.
Oh,
Les Scrubs.
Great name.
Wow. Why do they have an accent?
Let's talk about Braden. Why don't you take lead on this? I know you want to talk about
what I really wanted to talk about is that the fact of they did have a professional cleaning come in the next day. But one of the things noted by some of the first police officers and the maids that were in there first was two sets. Like, you know how you get the towels, right? You get towels, you get a couple towels.
No, towels. Extra towels. Right?
You get a couple towels, a couple face towels, a couple square towels.
Yeah. Butt towel.
Yeah.
You need a butt towel.
Because that toilet paper's hard.
Button gooch towel.
After a while, you're there for any amount of time, right? You need a wet towel. They noticed that there was two of the hand or face towels, like the medium towels, like you wouldn't dry your body with. Two of those medium ones were on the ground and they had looked like they had been used to try to start cleaning up the blood on the floor, right? Like they had been wiped through the blood. There was kind of blood streaks and then they were just kind of tossed in the corner like dirty laundry. And that was noticed by
not suspicious at all.
So if you're going to kill yourself, why would you even bother mopping up any of the blood?
How would you even be able to?
Here's my thought. This is my thought process on that because there were so many wounds. Usually when there is somebody when they do slit their wrists, there is usually a few hesitation slices, right? You don't do the entire job and maybe did a couple slices, changed his mind, maybe tried to clean him up potentially, and then went back to the bathroom, changed his mind. I find that highly unlikely, but that's the only way in my brain that.
Unless there was someone else there.
Well, secondly, is like.
Oh, and they got blood on
them. That kind of just paints a different picture because when you say, like, oh, he did all this in the bathtub, well, then it goes to the point of like, well, no, there was actually quite a bit of blood on the wall and the bathroom floor, which means he would have started the cuts while standing outside of the bathtub.
And then it depends if he hit an artery, there's going to be an arterial spray, right?
And he must have, because if he got to the tendon on a few of those cuts, he went vertical, he did it the right way
as well.
So
which a lot of people don't do.
Did you have another interesting fact about Les Scrubs?
I mean, the two towels to me were pretty fucking damning right there. Like that's super bizarre. The fact that the cleaning company felt like they were told everything's good. So they tossed these towels away. They disposed of them. They cleaned everything. Fucking evidence. Gonzo. Right? And just the fact, like, it's crazy to me that this place was professionally cleaned and they didn't even do a secondary. First of all, they didn't do the autopsy and they didn't do a secondary investigation of the scene until after it was fucking cleaned.
Well, and everything's gone. Like, what are you going to...
Carpets are shampooed, walls are scrubbed.
Yeah, bleached, exactly. Like, everything. Deep cleaned. You know what I mean? There's going to be nothing left in there.
Do you want to know something that they did find, though?
Yes. I want to know.
You know some little something they did find?
I want to know.
You want to know? So we're going to get into the fact that Danny was rumored to have a certain set of documents with him, which were not found with him. We're going to touch on that. But they did end up finding something. They did find a scrap piece of paper rolled up and tucked into one of Danny's shoes. All right? The little piece of paper that was tucked in his shoe contained an outline for a chapter of the book that he was writing titled Behold the Pale Horse. There's another book called that. That's not this. There's a popular one written in the 90s.
Huge,
this
is not it.
This was his own book.
Horse, yeah.
Exactly. This is not that one. This is his own conspiracy book. So this was supposedly the final chapter of his book, which read chapter on 1980, Terrorist Underground, Afghanistan, Middle East, Iran, John Philip Nichols, After Arrival, Indian Reservation, Fred Alvarez, Paul Mascara, Philip Arthur Denson, Fresno, Hercules, Bill Kilpatrick, The Big Tex, Ricano, San Francisco, finish up chapter with Paul M. and Fred A. All right? So,
we're gonna, people.
Exactly. And right away, we'll talk just on two guys. He says, finish up the chapter on Paul M. and Fred A. Well, Fred A. is Fred Alvarez, who was the vice chairman of the Cabazon Tribal Council, all right? Well, he was that prior to his death, which was execution style murder.
Fuck.
Okay? Murder. Paul Mascara was appointed to run that same tribe's casino and died 6 months after Alvarez.
Murdered.
Murder.
Oh.
That's what they did find.
Well, goddamn.
Before
that just sets it up.
Before we get into any further, I got to use the facilities and I need another drink.
A quick refill. Going to grab a beer.
Don't have a bath.
Don't have a bath.
Yeah.
We're going to be right back.
Look, you like Dan, you got a trip to Thailand coming up and you want to impress the locals? Well, then you want Rosetta Stone. It's been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 different languages offered. It's got fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. Rosetta Stone has amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
Sure, there's competitors to Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta Stone offers more languages and a lifetime membership. You could go over to Babbel and get 60% off, but it's not for a lifetime. That's why we're promoting Rosetta Stone today. All right, Theorites, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Alien Theorist Theorizing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your damn life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today or look for the link in the show notes. Peace.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
We're back! So one of the things we kind of briefly touched on in this hotel room was that there was some sort of notes or something that weren't found there. Well, one of the other things, and me and Zell know this firsthand. This guy was an investigative journalist, and he carried with him,
investigatory
journalist, he carried with him all his notes from this story he was working on, this huge story. And if he's anything like George Knapp, papers on papers, baby. Me and Zell witnessed.
His life work is in his briefcase.
Yeah, me and Zell witnessed George Knapp going through like 1,000 loose leaf papers, you know, just tossing them around shuffling, in the middle shuffling, of public.
Shuffling.
Trying to make loose connections and shit. And it sounds like Danny was kind of the same. Oddly enough, by all accounts, he had all his research with him on this trip. And he'd been working on this story for over a year.
His maid actually witnessed him pack it all with him before he left for Murfreesboro.
Now, none, not a single, other than what was found in the shoe and the suicide note, not a single shred
Zero.
Of research was found.
Zilch.
Gone.
Yeah, and
nada.
Yeah, and we've been talking about, I mean, yeah, he was an investigatory journalist. We've been saying that he's had these papers. We haven't really said...
What was he investigating? Really
what he's investigating.
What's he investigating?
In short, he was trying to expose, in his mind, a sea of covert operative super surveillance software and transnational spies, linking them all together to form something that he referred to as the Octopus. Right? So he had spent about a year...
Yeah, that's what I did.
Spent about a year. Starting the case. And the case started when he met a man named William Hamilton, who owned a software company called Inslaw. And according to Hamilton, his company developed a piece of software called Promise, which stands for Prosecutor's Management Information System. And it would gather and organize paperwork from law enforcement and the court system, make it easier to search and whatnot, blah, blah, blah.
It was at the time like revolutionary. You got to remember, this is a time where court systems and
buddy, this is basically having those three fucking psychics and Minority Report pooping out pool balls to tell you what's going
who's
on.
Murdering who?
All right,
shooting out ping pong balls. Murder.
Yeah.
So he met this guy, William Hamilton, and Hamilton was a former employee at the Justice Department, and he claimed that the government stole this program and was using it without his permission. Who he was the creator.
Well,
was what he said.
I that's not quite it. I think more what the allegations are that the government began to use it. They signed a 3-year term with him. They loved it. The government's like, hey, we love this. This is good. We're going to widespread across, you know, across the United States. We're going to use it. And then in the second year of this 3-year term, the government just stopped paying their bills. The United States government just stopped paying Inslaw, right?
So they stole it.
They stole it.
And so Inslaw...
They began stealing it.
You know, being the United States federal government, that's their big money. That's their ticket. Have to file bankruptcy, right? Because they're ruined because the United States government is just not paying the bills. And in this time...
And this is literally... This is literally a mom and pop fucking software company. Like there's two people that own this. It's like grassroots. It's
so
super easy for them to go fucking bankrupt.
As they're going bankrupt because the United States government is just being like, yeah, we're using the software and we're not paying it. They find out that the Canadian government is also using Inslaw, yet the Canadian government didn't buy it, didn't lease it, didn't buy it from them. And they're using their proprietary software. But you know what? Here's the thing. Napster's a bitch, man. 90s, right? That's where they got the Canadian government. Napster.
This is well before Napster.
Because, you know what I mean? They're downloading stuff.
Dude, you're 10.
LimeWire, FrostWire.
You're 10 years, but.
Buddy, preview play.
You got 9 seconds.
Yeah, the Canadian government just Napstered that shit.
They're 10 years before file transfer.
Yeah.
There's no way. And not only so, that he did have a case though, because it spent years in litigation from 1988 until about like 1990. And then it was actually the judge ruled in favor of Inslaw, saying they had a case. But in 1991, the decision was overturned through appeal.
And you know why it was overturned? It was overturned due to a technicality. The Court of Appeals ruled that the case should have been tried in federal district court and not bankruptcy court. So they overturned it.
That was the reason.
And then it went to federal district court where the guy was like, nah, you guys got nothing. Fuck off.
Right? So that's what started Castellaro's.
They bankrupted these poor fucking people. They invented this revolutionary product, the software, and they bankrupted them. Stole it.
It gets even worse because the Hamiltons then were approached by like some government officials who were like, listen, like the United States is using this software, but we're also we're selling this software to other countries and we're using the money that we recoup from selling it to fund black op operations. That's what they told the Hamiltons. So the Hamiltons are like, what? So now when you start to look at this and you're like, they get the big court run around. And as soon as they hit the federal court, where a lesser court was like, you have a case. You 100% have a case. This is, you know, kind of interesting. And then it does the big loop around, gets to the federal court. And they're like, nah, nothing. You got nothing here. It's like, well, the people you're trying to look at are the same people like in bed with the people making these court decisions.
Crazy.
And it gets even crazier because then later on, after this whole initial fiasco, Castellaro met Hamilton again. He discussed the possibility of writing a story about InSlaw, the Promise software, and the government's involvement. Like this, about just trying to expose this whole, all these shenanigans.
Just this shady, basically the government being a shady, yeah,
being the government.
Stealing from them, bankrupting them. Then take
it. We never heard the government do that before. That doesn't make sense. That's so ungovernmentally.
Stealing their proprietary software, then selling it to other countries to fund black op operations. Like, man, that sounds like a juicy story in itself.
And then, but no, it gets crazier. And at that meeting, Hamilton gave him a 12-page memo written by a man named, someone's going to help me with this last name, Michael Riconoscudo.
Yeah, it's called Riconoscudo.
Outlining the allegations.
Like prosciutto, but shudo.
Outlining the allegations of Riconoscudo. The case. Riconoscudo claimed that the government had put some type of like backdoor into this Promise software, which would allow them to access the computer of anyone who was using it. Like a spy software.
Well, and
so spying on the people that sold it to, like the Canadians.
Other governments, other organizations.
And if you think about what this, like... Think about like the implications of this, because this is supposed to revolutionize like the justice system, like law enforcement databases. And now you're selling this to countries to revolutionize theirs. And you have a backdoor to all of that information. Anyone absolutely everything. So like me as a private citizen, if I had a charge, you know, that was pending that I wasn't found guilty on, right? It was just going through the court systems or something. Now the United States government would know. They could flag me for whatever it was in any other kind of case. For whatever reason, they would know. They would have the intelligence. They would have just such a broad spectrum of, you know, data. It's unbelievable.
And then it gets even crazier. The day before Castellaro died, he met a man named William Turner, who was a former defense contractor. And Turner gave him documents proving corruption that Danny could tie to his case of the octopus. But before Danny could finish the story about the octopus, this seemingly global spanning tentacle monster of surveillance and government conspiracy, he was found dead in a hotel room.
Okay. Fucking crazy. We got to kick it back to Riconoscudo, yep. Whatever. If you remember my little blurb from The Pale Horse, there was one word. Where is it? Let me find it. Riccano.
Mm.
Okay. Mentioned that in his book. Now, doing a little digging on Riconoscudo. Riconoscudo actually filed an affidavit before the House
Judiciary. You got to really marble up your mouth to say it.
Judiciary.
Sure.
Good. No, that's how he said.
Judiciary Committee. The House Judiciary. Fucking hell. The House Judiciary Committee.
Judiciary.
It's a hard word, though. Photography is a pretty easy word. Okay, so the House Judiciary Committee about his allegations that the government had put those backdoors in the software, allowing them to spy on foreign governments that they sold the government to, right? So he brings that up before the House. He had also claimed that these modifications made the software, these modifications of the software was made at a lab located on a Native American reservation in California, because the reservation was sovereign territory. So the government would have no regulation or sovereignty in there. Now, we want to maybe like hinder a guess as to, you know, what tribe presided on that land.
Mm.
Maybe the one that Fred Alvarez was the tribal council chief of.
That was murdered?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
That was murdered, execution style. In addition, he claimed that the reservation had been used by a private security company in order to develop chemical and bio warfare weapons.
Oh, shit.
All right. So he's making these giant claims. So obviously, the government, everybody's got to take him seriously. He's smoking gun. You know, everybody's like, oh, this is fucking crazy, right? Well, unfortunately, within 8 days of his declaration, Riconsciuto was arrested for conspiracy to manufacture and distribute and possession to distribute, or with intent to distribute, of methamphetamine. Yeah. And got sentenced to 25 years in jail.
God damn.
You want to know something else pretty fucking weird about this? I was licking this guy up because I like to do a lot of, like, I do a lot of reading on the Reddit boards. He's also one of the biggest candidates to be Q.
Really? Didn't they find out who Q was?
Which is kind of interesting. Apparently, at some point, they thought it might be him.
Interesting.
Well, and this is interesting too, because, I mean, you know, we talked about it last week. You know, it seems like whenever there's an issue person, the easiest way to get them, to silence them,
drugs or kitty porn.
Instantly, right? It's like the two sick.
Two options. Or kill them, I guess.
Or just straight up murder. There's three.
Suicide them.
Here's the thing. It's if they're saying something, though, usually it's... I would say this. When we've seen people who like Riconsciuto, who are saying, who come forward and say these things, you know, it's if that person's murdered, then it just gives so much, because nothing they're saying, everything they're saying is allegations. So if all of a sudden they end up mysteriously murdered, you go, God damn, he was obviously murdered because of what he was saying. That's what he was saying was fact. That has to be why he's dead. All of a sudden, if like, honestly, like, I hate to say it, because some people charged, should be charged terrible. But it's like, government puts kitty porn on your computer. They're like, hey, we're arresting you for kitty porn. Everyone goes, that guy's fucking crazy. I don't want nothing to do with this person. He's fucking,
well, absolutely.
Fuck,
that guy's a piece of shit.
Instant.
Because instant like that, and like the drug, so easy to get a prosecution, right? And then it's like, oh, this guy's a fucking drug dealer. He's a drug addict, right? Like, who's this guy?
Even if you're not convicted in the end, in the court of public opinion, you're guilty forever.
Yeah.
This guy was definitely convicted and spent at least 20 years behind bars.
I'm saying, if it happened to you, even if you weren't convicted, you had a good defense and you're like, I'm innocent. It doesn't matter.
And we are just to get the record straight.
No.
We're not saying not that saying if it. You were convicted
if you
porn,
wanted to plant the government's after on somebody.
You, we're saying that that's a government tool. Fact. That they've used in the past. Hashtag look it up in other cases. Like the Shermans. They were plotting against the Shermans in the last week's case file to do just one of these two things. They're like, we can't kill him yet. But we'll nail him with the drugs.
They did. And then it became easier to kill him.
Yeah, because they were like, they had the family, right? They had enough avenues. But
was that it about the octopus, Zell?
Well, we can go through some more on the prosciutto blurbs, you know, about what was found out through then. So the octopus theory also was sent around. The October surprise theory, which involved the Iran hostage crisis, where several U.S. citizens and diplomats were held hostage by a group of, like, what was it, militarized students. And they
College belong students.
To the Muslim student followers of the Imams line in Tehran. And it goes that Iran deliberately held back the American hostages in order to help Ronald Reagan win the 1980 election over Jimmy Carter.
That's legit, though.
Like now? No.
That's pretty much fact.
And other parts of the technical theory was involved in the collapse of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which collapsed in July of 1991. Date. Coincidence? He was onto it, supposedly. Because what? That was, it went bankrupt in 91. The whole fucking bank.
Man, I'll tell you, like, just on a brief side note, if we want to get into some absolutely insane, like, government conspiracy on bank run, some of these crypto exchanges that have been going belly up in the last, that have huge, like, Democratic and Republican donation ties, that have just been, like, huge Ponzi schemes / like money laundering schemes that are just being absolutely exposed right now. Started with FTX. It's looking like crypto.com might be next. Just like wild shit. You know, but the same thing, right?
Trying to make money real quick.
Exact same kind of shit that's going on in the, you know, with the Commerce International in 91. Same thing. We're kind of, history's kind of not repeating itself, but it rhymes.
Well, yeah, they're under, what was it, like money laundering claims.
Dude, I'm telling you, that is what is happening. Just in a brief synopsis of what's happening right now in the crypto world.
Synopsis.
The FTX, huge crypto exchange run by this fucking nerd and his six orgy friend nerds with absolutely...
Yeah, they're all banging no each other. Oversight. I read that. It's weird.
They had like every kind of... They were just paying like... They were paying the Democratic Party an insane amount of donations. The Democratic Party was giving money to Ukraine. Ukraine was just basically giving money back to FTX, investing in them. It was just this big fucking money laundering loop. And at the end of the day, they were lying about their holdings. They had a bank run. Everyone was trying to pull their money out. They crashed to zero. Turns out they didn't have any of the assets they talked about. They had like $600 million left in assets. All of a sudden, as all this is coming to light, like the next day, they're like, we were hacked. Everything's gone. Meanwhile, the founder's like, left the country. You can't hear from him. You don't know where he is. Like, obviously, he's the one that hacked the remaining $600 million. Dude, they were sponsoring the World Series. They had all their like company shit on all the World Series. Like, it's mind-boggling. All these like A-list celebrities that were endorsing it are like,
Hey, you know what? When there's a get-rich-quick scheme, people jump on board. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Larry David didn't. He didn't buy in.
It was also that the tentacles ran deep into what the Iran-Contra affair, which was another political scandal involving the Reagan administration supplying weapons to what was the Islamic, how do you pronounce that? Khomeini, yeah, government of the Islam Republic of Iran, which went on for...
Ayatollah. Just say Ayatollah because he was the Ayatollah. Gotcha.
Went on for 6 years from 81 to 86.
But like, honestly, that's... If you've listened to this podcast and you have listened to any CIA, done any research into the CIA and stuff, the United States government has been funding rebels and shit in countries to overthrow governments forever.
Listen.
This is new.
Hey. We're just getting started. You guys want to get into these tentacles?
Yeah, let's get it.
You want to dive deep into these fucking tentacles?
I want tentacles.
These little suction cuppy tentacles. You want to just rub up on you, in you, in your mouth holes, suction all that cups. Shit?
Hentai ass.
They also claimed that the tentacles were involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Of course.
But that was just one of the many coups and assassinations pulled off by the octopus since the end of World War II. Group had come together over a covert operation to invade Albania. The octopus had overthrown Jacob Arbenz in Guatemala in 1954. It had targeted operations against Fidel Castro, culminating in the Bay of Pigs. It had also had tentacles in the political upheavals in Angola, Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Nigeria, Chile, Iran, and Iraq. Like we talked in, they had involvement with putting Ronald Reagan into power with the infamous October surprise. Membership within the Octopus included John Sigleb and the late CIA director, William Colby, who were the heads of the Phoenix assassination program in Vietnam. They had implemented an early version of Promise tracking software to keep tabs on the Viet Cong. Other tentacles included characters like E. Howard Hunt and Bernard Baker, who later emerged as the Watergate burglars.
And all those things you just said are case files on their own.
Yeah. Oh, right? 100%. Oh,
this is pretty much the global cabal people talk about, right?
Yeah.
Literally, that's what he claimed it was.
Basically, like when he was like, when we say like the elite, right? Or like the they, he was writing an article about the they. They slash them. He was writing an article about them.
He was talking about the Jim Jimmersons.
It's pretty well known that these big money groups move, right? Like, and they sway. They'll sway political parties. They'll sway governments in other countries, right? They'll fund things to bankrupt other things. Like, I would say that that's a pretty known thing that there's these organizations that do that. And he is just bringing one to light that's doing this in the shadows. That's what was happening in the 90s.
Fucking wild. He's deep into this, his octopus conspiracy.
The octopus hole. Octopus hole.
He's staring at the beak.
No, he's past the beak, bud. He's past the gullet, all of it. He's in there. He's in the inky spot.
All that's left is his ankles hanging out. That's like, he's been swallowed.
Oh, yeah.
He's deep.
But like, this must have been all consuming for him. Like, can you think about like, this started out as you're like, the government fucked over a Mon Pa company. And then all of a sudden you're just like, hey, they're using this software to spy on other countries. And they're like, who is? And you start to uncover all this other shit. You're like, oh my God, this is insane. This is like, you know, at every level of government, this is getting involved in this, in shady dealings, like criminal activity.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. So even if 10% of what he was looking into was true, like he's in well over his head. And it's perfect reason for him to be silenced, as some people say.
Yeah, Epstein, as we now refer to this. Yeah.
So let's go to that. Because let's circle back now to just the day before, pretty much the last time he was seen, like the events leading up to the night where he died. So he was last seen at a Pizza Hut when he told one of the waitresses, you know, he's being a little flirty. He liked her eyes and quoted The Great Gatsby. And then he went on to meet Henry Turner at the Sheraton Hotel at 2:30. And that's where he gave him the documents. They parted ways shortly after. Then he spent the next few hours at a restaurant where a bartender, this is the only time we get like a depressed Danny. A bartender says he looked depressed, seemed lonely.
Yeah, he could just be bagged. He's tired. Maybe he has resting I'll depressed say this. Face. Like I'm
brain
yeah, has
I'll
that.
Say this and I'll I'll say this. When we saw George Knapp, I would have at the you know lunch table at AlienCon, and he pulled out his briefcase and was shuffling through about 1,000 papers. I would have described George Knapp as stressed and depressed because he was like moaning. 100%. He was like sighing, like looking at these papers.
I'm going to be honest with you right now. I'm going to be 100% honest right now. Dano, you're looking a little stressed and depressed.
Yeah, Dano.
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on, man? Yeah, we'll talk about it after. It's fine.
Save for after.
Yeah, whatever. It is what it is.
So, after he got his documents, he went to the bar. And then he was at the cocktail lounge at the Sheraton at around 5. With a man that people describe as Iranian. Is he meeting another con?
What do you mean, buddy? Huh? What do you mean, buddy? What are you talking about?
Mohammed!
What do you mean, huh?
There's no more details about this Iranian-looking man. Was he meeting another contact that we don't know about? Not sure.
It's interesting you say that because the part of the report that his housekeeper gave that she did say that he did have a meeting within the week before leaving for Martinsburg with a man that looked to be dark-skinned or Arab. Mm.
There you go. Was he meeting? Was in he his meeting house. Another contact for more information about the octopus. Potentially, but there's not.
We know we've got ties to Iran, so.
After that, he said he met a man named Mike Looney who was staying in the room next to him. They chatted for a bit at around 5:30. They met again around 8. He stated that Danny was waiting to meet another contact who was going to give him more information to solve the huge case. Octopus.
See, this now to me though, like it's starting to paint a picture of Danny to me. Danny's got loose lips, baby. Because who the fuck is this? Who is this guy? He's at the bar. Hey, he's like, listen. I got this huge case I'm about to solve. The octopus. Yeah, well,
he's got fuck. He's on the wine and nine, boys. He's having a good time. Loose lips sink ships. He's having a time.
Yeah, he even goes as far as to talk to Mike and say, the guy probably blew me off. He leaves briefly for a phone call. He comes back. They keep talking around 9:30. The last time Danny was seen alive was at a convenience store around 10 p.m. buying a coffee. So he's gearing up for an all-nighter.
That 100%. That's, when I read that, I was like, this.
Hey, there, buddy, boys, there's weirdos that can fucking crush a coffee and go to bed, though.
I'm one of those.
I can do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Are you? Oh, God. Listen, caffeine, all caffeine intake. I'm talking chocolate. I'm talking fucking caffeines. I'm talking everything.
1 milligram in your toast.
10 a.m. I'm stunned. You see I'm shutting down at 10 a.m.
Yeah, check these ones out. I got them.
Yeah, boys.
Immune to caffeine.
Yeah, buddy. You pack those things and go to Disney.
Immune to caffeine. Yeah.
Except when I drink coffee.
Two carry-ons right here.
Like, yeah, buddy. Those aren't carry-ons, buddy. You got to check those bad boys.
It's for if I'm going to play a show or something late. I'll drink coffee,
but to pretend it works.
Bed, yeah, if I had to go to bed, I could go to bed.
Sometimes I'll use it as a placebo. I'll be like, I'm not tired.
One cup of coffee. I don't even get a big boost from it, but I can't sleep and I'm peeing every 20 minutes. Like just peeing my pants. Gotta go. It's the worst. Still drink a lot of it though.
Yeah, I mean, so we've talked about a lot of controversial facts. But it even goes as far as say that, according to the FBI, police were not very cooperative when the FBI started looking in. They're almost met with like complete resistance from the Martinsburg police and prosecutor's office.
Yeah, because they didn't want to admit that they shit the bed so bad.
Exactly.
No, right? I don't want to talk about this. We fucking blew it. We dropped the fucking ball.
There is a serious pattern in government and law enforcement where if you make a mistake, it's not apologize, it's cover up. We're seeing that right now.
Deny.
With that school shooting, right? Where like the
in Texas.
The entire law enforcement just refused to participate with federal investigation and shit. It's because like they.
Yeah, because they were scared. They
and you.
Of course, it's scary, but you chose to wear the badge. Yeah. Man, get the fuck in there.
Yeah.
Those are children.
Yeah, we won't get into it, but it's like that unfortunately is the culture of like if you make a mistake and like very quickly just. Even us, a couple of duds from Canada reading the circumstances, you go like, well, this wasn't done properly. Like this 100% was not done properly. Right. And so like the FBI starts asking questions. It kind of makes sense that they instantly clam up because you got to remember this is people's livelihoods, right? There's probably like, you know, inspectors and chiefs and stuff that are outside of the police union or whatever that could potentially lose their jobs over something like this. So they don't like, it's their livelihood. So they're trying to, you know, minimize their involvement by being as unhelpful as possible.
Yeah. I mean, it goes... Police withholding information, just trying everything they can to not admit that they fucked up in the investigation. I mean, even in the end, when the evidence of the extra towels, bloody towels came up, they're just like, whatever.
Yeah, we didn't see him.
Yeah, we missed him, I guess. Yeah. Is irrelevant to the case.
They went as far as hiring this expert witness who's a... Dr. Henry Lee, apparently he's a crime scene expert, blood spatter expert. They hire this guy and they do a reenactment of the scene so they can try to find out, get this guy to deem, like, was it a suicide or not? This professional gives a stamp of approval. Yeah, it was a suicide. And then a few months later, he learns about the fucking bloody towels.
They didn't even give him all the information.
That were hidden under the sink. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, why didn't you guys say that? Like, I put my name on this and now I'm learning about that? Like, that's fucking ridiculous.
Evidence from him.
And
it's crazy,
and
man.
Just to get this, I truly, I don't know. It's a tough one for me because I do not think the like local police were involved. I just think the local police were incompetent.
And they were negligent. Yeah, they
negligent
were
and incompetent. Lazy.
Lazy.
Do I think they were involved? No, I just think they were just bad at the job. And they're just like, hey, open, shut, Clay. Suicide. Boom.
Suicide.
Done. Close the books. Let's go. Same like we talked about last week with the Toronto Police Service. They had Scully and Hitchcock. They flew him down from Toronto. Right? Oh, can you look into this one? It's suicide. They're like, okay, perfect. Done. Clean up, boys.
Need a cheeseburger. Yeah. And then we got to get to one more thing before we wrap this case up. And that is, we talked about it briefly, the conflicting reports of his briefcase. Supposedly, he had a briefcase that contained all his files, his notes, documents, all pertaining to his octopus conspiracy. They interviewed like many hotel employees who had contact with Danny. They never found the briefcase in the hotel, but the front desk employee did recall Danny carrying a brown briefcase, which indicates that perhaps someone took the briefcase from his room. Perhaps the same person who staged a suicide by slashing this guy's wrists and putting him in a bathtub.
Well, or potentially drugging him. And like, there,
we don't know the events, but something.
There was bruises happened on him, right? So it's like, we're not 100% sure, but it really points to that this was not...
We're 0% sure. We have there was no idea.
But I would say the evidence, for me, the evidence points to that this was probably not a suicide. Just...
I mean, there are some things that we didn't touch on, like the fact that that Danny had just had his third book proposal rejected. He had a $178,000 fucking mortgage payment that was due... Right, he had stuff like that. He had mounting pressure from friends and family for what he's working on. He did state that he was getting ready to release his article to Time magazine about the octopus, which was not true. And then there's a possibility of the fact that he did know that he had MS, and he got lost within this case and potentially realized that maybe this was going nowhere, and he was chasing dead ends and got sucked in the deep dark hole of depression.
Well, dragons.
Do I think that's what happened?
Well, let's expand on that just a little bit. Like, so let's say that, that person that saw him that was depressed, maybe the information that he had just received from Turner didn't bear the fruits that he thought. So it's like his story is going nowhere. But there's still a story. There's still a story. And like, to be fair, the Inslaw case and this kind of stuff, is fact. The Inslaw scandal is real. You can look it up. That it is well documented, and this he would have
real
broken this case. So there is...
Same with the October surprise. That is now considered a fact.
So there's enough of that, but like, let's say that maybe this is kind of where my brain thought, because I was trying to like, when I... These specific cases, I always am like, he did the murder, or he did this. That's kind of where my brain always goes, so I try to think through that process. I don't know why.
Me too. Guilty.
I'm like, guilty, did it. So I was trying to figure out, okay, well, maybe why. So then I thought, maybe he got to a point in this investigation where he went, I know this is real, but I can't prove it. I can no longer, with my means, with what's happened now, I can no longer prove it. I've gone as far as I can with my investigative journalist. So he destroys his briefcase, he destroys his notes, and he sets up his suicide to look as suspicious as possible so that someone else might look in, and this might be a catalyst to find out this other information.
Why destroy your briefcase, though, in that sense?
Because you want people to be
leave a treasure trail to your briefcase in a different location that sets up someone.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I was just trying to give a nugget of potentially why he could have done it, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Or kill yourself, but make it look like obviously suspicious.
Right? Yeah.
Like make it look obviously suspicious, have your documents there. So like, holy fuck, this guy was onto something and he was obviously fucking murdered.
What I'm saying is there's too many humps to get over for me to be like, yeah, he obviously killed himself. There's too many humps that just don't add up. The fact that we've never found any of his documents, any of his research that he'd been recent, like, and by all means, he was one of those people that just becomes like tunnel vision, just part of his work. I'm locking myself
infatuated
away.
Infatuated with this story.
And
that's all he thought about.
Not a note.
What if somebody took it? Like, what if he got silenced and then he was like, I've got nothing now.
Maybe. And someone stole it. Someone stole the...
Right? Somebody came out to him, took all his shit, and was like, you're fucking done.
Like, hey, I need the briefcase. Yeah. I know what you've been into. He took it. And
but you would still have a mental, like, you know what I mean? I think if you lost everything, you'd still piece a lot of it together back.
Let's go back to the fucking suicide.
I was just going
to
say that.
At the end, because apparently he's a devout Catholic. And he took his own life. And he says, I know God will let me in. Maybe he was forced to commit suicide. He had a 22-year-old son who lived in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they're like, listen, Danny, here's this all. We have all this information on your son. We're coming to fucking kill your kid. Okay.
Unless you do this now.
And you that was, maybe that was a coded way of saying that. Because obviously if you commit suicide, you cannot
because he was forced to kill himself.
Not gained access to
suicide is instant route
to hell. He hits an artery. The guy takes a little bit of fucking spray, grabs some towels, wipes the blood off, tosses them underneath the sink in this otherwise perfectly fucking clean scene.
Grabs the briefcase, off he goes.
Right, and that's why he says, like, right? I know I'll gain it. Well, God will let me in or something, whatever.
God will let me in.
Let me in. Because he was
like, this isn't
suicide.
A real suicide. I'm being, this is a murder. Which would make sense.
Because
he's pointing.
It's also the same thing because this is another thing for the Catholic religion. Self-sacrifice is an instant guarantee to heaven. So if his son was threatened to die and he had to kill himself to save him, it's just like in the Marvel movie Constantine, when he kills himself, save the other, and then the devil can't take him.
Constantine's DC.
Well, you know what I mean.
You gotta be better than that, Zal.
Comics. I'm just saying.
He tried. Hey, give me A+ for effort.
Good solid try.
The fact that he knew about it is impressive.
Now, I like the movie.
The other fascinating fact is that Danny is like wallet, personal effects found in the room, you know, notes about the case. None of that has ever been released to the family, even at the request, right? Like none of his personal stuff has ever been released to the family.
Anything recovered?
Which is, to me, I'm like, what? Why not just release that stuff? Why aren't you released? Like, release his wallet. Why? What do you need the wallet for?
Yeah, and there was also stuff that I couldn't really substantiate about some FBI agents being told to not look any farther, and or else their careers would be ruined. Like they did not. You know, as goes the message boards and internet lore. Looking, some of them questioned the suicide of him, and they're like, "Oh, well, let's look into this," and then they were told, don't look any farther. That's it.
It's suicide.
Well, apparently, like one of the other things is that like is it the DOJ that says that 90% of his files missing now at this
something
point?
Something like that, yeah.
What? Come on.
The Department of Justice says that a lot of his file is gone.
Is missing. Right? Not redacted, gone.
Boys, it's fucking, this is so shit.
Octopus is a real baby. They infiltrate 100%. All
I've
levels
been
of
you
government
guys,
and society.
Nothing more dangerous than an octopus. They got their tentacles everywhere.
So I think Danny was, I mean, it's hard to make a full conclusion, but it seems like there's much more than just guy was down on his luck. His story wasn't going where he wanted to. He had a mortgage payment and he took his own life. There's too much to it.
Dan, what do you think?
All right. Honestly, I think
fair.
Personally, it's like this story coming out then, before all this stuff, what we know now, the implications, even now, someone was murdered, right? On American soil that was trying to break a case about American people. You know what I mean? Like the political implications, right? The huge scandal.
Judiciary.
You got it.
Right. High level people, you know, spying on foreign countries. Like This is big. This is a big
just
fucking...
Just the software alone.
It's a big huge. Fucking scandal.
It's
right?
huge.
And then you tie it into all this other stuff. And this, if honestly, if even 10%, like we said earlier, if at the time 10% of this was true, which we can substantiate quite a bit of it was true, whether it was connected or not, we don't know. He was in trouble. Like he was, by all accounts, he was running his mouth, right? He was telling everyone to meet in contacts, like obviously to get into this world and get the information he was getting, he was having to make shady contacts. And who's to say that one of these people wasn't connected enough to be like, someone's asking questions.
People were calling his house and making threats.
Yeah. Breathing on the phone.
Like if it's just suicide, who's calling his phone and doing that? Nah.
Yeah.
There's more to it. I mean, obviously the case is still ruled a suicide and it probably will never be overturned, but the events of the case lead to mass speculation and podcasts, documentaries, investigations about it. There's
internet sleuths
are always slinking around,
all right,
poking their noses in.
All right, sleuths, let us know what you think, right? What do you think? Hashtag look it up, listen to this case law. Is this a suicide or is there something more nefarious at work? You can find us on all our socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. When you start seeing the posts, you know, start letting us know your thoughts. We want to hear them.
Leave a comment. Let us know. All right. Let's move on to Theorite of the Week.
Woo!
This week's Theorite of the Week is none other than Joseph Knott. He sent us individual gifts, which I haven't opened yet.
Josie Claus.
I have Andrew's at my house. I've sent Braden his. Braden also sent you your ATT neon sign.
Nice.
Should be soon. So we'll open them all together, but he sent us personalized gifts.
So what you're saying is he's not on the naughty list. Personalized anthrax for all of us.
Hey, you get your perfect blend to your genetic code.
Instant death.
But he's also been an absolute legend on the Facebook group Meme King. Junior, I would call him. He's been fucking working hard this year.
Prince of memes.
Hell yeah. Joseph Knott, you were this week's Theory of the Week. Well deserved. I believe that's a 2-time. Ooh. At least. If not three. Yeah. I don't even know.
Oh, if at least. If not, if 3-time.
Uh-oh.
Absolute legend. He's putting him in the running.
He's a usurper.
He's the usurper.
Kingslayer. He might be the Kingslayer.
We'll see, though. Yeah, you got to keep it going. Year's not over.
Goddamn.
All right, and we tell you every fucking case file. If you're not supporting the show, you got to go to alientheorist.com. You got to hit the support link to get early access, ad-free, extended after hours, all the bonus stuff. What are you waiting for? You've listened to all these episodes. What are we on, like 259 case files, but I think we're well over 300 episodes.
Oh, easy.
You can count all the shit in there.
Yeah.
Anyways, this week's newest supporters, we got Brick.
Just Brick.
You got old Brick.
Brick Tamlin.
Josh Wages. Ruzia Pieces. NZ Skunky Buds. Cody from Manitoba.
Wait, what?
NZ Skunky Buds. Cody from Manitoba is back. Wyatt Halliday.
Nice.
Mason Eubanks, Brady Morris, and Gladio Better Be Good. I think someone joined just for upgrading Gladio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that guy's post on Facebook.
It's a three-part. It is good.
It's a three-parter.
Me and Dan do a deep dive. 3 hours is Operation Gladio, and it's worth every minute of it.
The tip, the spear, and balls deep or something?
Like it's the tip. Yeah, that
the
is.
Shaft. The tip, the shaft, and balls deep.
Yeah.
It? Thank you very much for supporting the show.
And hey, listen, if you don't have any merch yet, it's Christmas time. Now's the time. Listen, don't wait any longer. Go to our store, alientheorist.com, hit merch, buy yourself a sweatsuit, buy your loved one a sweatsuit, buy some hats, buy some sweaters. And want a pickle baby? We got pickle baby. We got pickle baby shirt, pickle baby sweater. It's all ready. You say it then, you fucking.
I made a great t-shirt ad. All right? It's not my fault you didn't utilize it.
What? What was your ad?
I made a good t-shirt. You don't remember?
starring Axel and Niles.
Oh, that is good. Yes, so head to our store, get it. Anyways, the theme song's running out. As we say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.